Imagine this. You wake up one day in excruciating pain, so you go to the doctor, and the doctor looks at you and tells you it's all in your head. But you know it's not. That is the reality for millions of women who suffer from endometriosis, and it's also the subject of this month's book club pick, Ask Me About My Uterus by Abby Norman. This book is half nonfiction science, half memoir, as Abby shows readers what it's like to live with this condition and try and get a diagnosis. So, be aware, we're going to be talking about some hard topics in this week's episode, but we think this is a really important topic. So if you're ready, let's get this party started. Hi, this is Maria Blackheart, and welcome to the Misfit Book Club, a podcast for readers, weirdos, blue stockings, normals, scribbling women, madmen, loons, screwballs, and every type of bookish person in between. This is episode 17, and I'm joined by my co-host, Pixie Berger.
Hey, girl, hey!
Hey, Pixie, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
I have to tell you that this week I met someone who has been kicked out of a book club.
Oh, you did?
I did. It's actually one of my coworkers, and she told me this whole long story about how her book club had sent her this email about how she was too aggressive and opinionated for their club, and they were trying to not so politely ask her to never come back. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have the perfect solution for you. Oh, wait, I cannot tell you about our podcast because it's a big secret.
Well, maybe she'll find us on her own.
Maybe. Anyway, we're not alone.
I love that she got a Dear John letter from her book club.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, it's not us, it's you.
What's been going on with you, lady?
Well, it's been a while since we've recorded an episode, and that's my fault. So, sorry, guys, but we're back on track now, which is exciting.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that happened was I guest hosted another podcast.
That's right. You were on the Pseudophiles podcast.
I was. I'm on episode 57, Mysterious Disappearances, and I tell the story of the disappearance of Ambrose Bierce, who was one of the most famous writers, American writers, at the end of the 19th century. And he went to Mexico to fight / report on the Mexican Revolution and was never seen or heard from again.
Just disappeared into thin air.
You know, there are all these like wackadoodle ideas about what might have happened to him. And like, he was a real character in life too. So it was a super fun episode. I really loved doing it. And I think people would like to, might like to listen to it because it is book related.
I thought it was really funny. I enjoyed it a lot. The podcast is fun anyway. And it was just very exciting to hear you on it as well, contributing some of your knowledge.
Aw, thank you. It is not safe for work, so keep that in mind.
Well, so. I enjoyed it for sure.
I hope other people will go listen. Go listen. What about you?
Well, a lot has happened since we recorded last. Avengers Infinity War came out, and I didn't see it.
Are you serious?
I haven't seen it.
Do you want to see it?
I don't know. I feel like I'm so far behind in the Marvel universe that it might be a little much for me. And I've already read some spoilers, so I kind of know what's going on.
Oh, I see. I will say, if you haven't seen Civil War, Thor Ragnarok, and Black Panther, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2, you will be lost. Because they don't contextualize anything.
Yes. That is exactly what I've heard. And I have seen two of those movies, but not the others.
It's worth seeing. I read a lot of like think pieces on it where people really hated the fact that nothing is contextualized. But I was like, how interesting for a movie to say, hey, like, here's 10 years of context. We're just going to make this thing.
Right. Well, and at some point, you know, if you're spending half of the story on backstory and exposition, it's not fun.
Yeah.
You got to move forward. You got to keep building. So I get it. But yeah, I haven't seen that. I guess I've seen it twice. You've seen it for both of us. That's fair. Well, that was kind of a big pop culture moment. We had Kanye, who lost his shit again on the internet. I can't even begin with him. So I feel like we should just not, maybe.
Okay. I mean, yes. Here's the thing. Kanye may or may not have a legitimate mental illness. And if he is like really mentally ill, I don't want to kick him while he's down.
Right.
But part of me thinks he's just like super egotistical.
That's my theory, really. It's one thing to make ridiculous claims. It's another thing to make ridiculous claims from a point of privilege and the assumption that all of your supposed discoveries or the things that have occurred to you that day are revolutionary. I just, I'm not on board. I'm not.
Nope. So. I hear you. Has he been tweeting recently or do you think Kim Kardashian shut that down?
Well, it's never Kim, guys. It's Chris. So I'm sure she's figuring out a way to spin it, but I don't know. It got pretty ugly there. I mean, John Legend and Chrissy were involved.
America's golden couple.
Yeah. Poor Chance the Rapper got involved. I mean, God bless him. So I think it's calmed down a little bit this week. But anyway, we'll see. It really makes sense, though, that he would be like all straight MAGA because he and that guy who's our president are kind of the same. And don't get me started on how Kanye ruined Bonnaroo 2008 for me.
No, please get started. One, I didn't realize you were at Bonnaroo in 2008.
I was. I think it was 2008. Uh-huh. But yes, he was supposed to be there. And his show was supposed to come on after Pearl Jam at like 11:30. He did not show up and they kept postponing and postponing and we're all sitting there. And he didn't show up until 4 o'clock in the morning. Basically, Whoa. We all missed the show because we went back to sleep because in Manchester, Tennessee, where they have Bonnaroo, the only like normal hours where you can actually sleep because it's not 1,000 degrees outside is between the hours of like 12:30 and 5. But no, he ruined it. And then he finally showed up. And by the time I got back to my tent and was like trying to sleep, his concert was really, really loud and it woke me up and it pissed me off. And I'm still mad about it.
Oh my gosh, vendetta.
Yeah, I'm not over it. I'm just going to be real. I'm not over it. So anyway, that was a personal crime against me. All of his other stuff is like crimes against humanity in general. Anyway, so yeah, he happened. Stormy Daniels happened.
Oh, the interview.
Yeah, she's That's been right. something. And then, of course, our favorite show, Westworld, returned. Ta-da!
And I didn't go back and rewatch the first season, so I'm super confused because I remember nothing.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused too. Maybe we both ought to go back and rewatch.
But I have a theory. Have I told you my theory?
You've mentioned it, but I think it's worth exploring here.
Okay, I think that Westworld and Jurassic Park happen on the same timeline.
I mean, why not?
They're both Michael Crichton
exactly.
books slash scripts.
Yeah, they are.
In the Jurassic Park book, if I recollect correctly, the guy who's designing the dinosaurs basically tells the park owner, like, hey, this is dangerous. We should make them mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
I think you're onto something.
I do, too. If dinosaurs show up in Westworld, what are you even going to do?
I'm going to be so excited. I'm going to lose it. It's going to be amazing.
So, yeah, there's been all sorts of stuff going on. Yeah. Have you had anything going on in your life personally?
I have been waiting to tell you this story. Okay, so I don't know if I've mentioned this in the pod, but I don't really like people, but I love people watching and I love spying on people and over, I guess, eavesdropping on their conversations.
I love it.
So anyway, I find that extremely entertaining. But the other day I was in a bookstore. And it's not a very big bookstore, but there were two ladies and there are a handful of people there, but there were these two ladies in the middle and kind of this little sitting area. And I was just walking from one side of the store to the other and they were both elders, one much more elder than the other. So it's feasible that one of the women could have been a daughter. So anyway, they'd just been sitting there minding their own business. And the much older lady, I hear her ask the question to the other woman. And I'm going to try to do this in my Southern voice because she was definitely very Southern. And guys, if you haven't figured it out, I live down here in the South. So she says, you know why all them cottontails have been going missing? People's bunny rabbits. And of course, I'm intrigued immediately. Uh-huh. And
mystery.
And the other woman says, no, I don't. Why? And she says, it's because everybody's been trapping them and they need them rabbit feet because everybody's got bad luck because of Trump. It was like the best, just out of nowhere, comment I've ever heard in a bookstore.
There's so much to unpack, like Trump and bad luck, but also the fact that, like, she just thinks people are just slaughtering rabbits to get their feet.
She thinks that's why all the cottontails have gone missing, which I didn't notice, but okay. And the same lady, you know, later in the store, we're just kind of walking around and she was trying to find a copy of Fire and Fury on tape. She wanted
on
it
tape.
On tape. Yes. And she was asking the sweet girl at the store, you know, do you have this one on tape? I've been hearing everything about it and I want to hear it on tape, which of course we don't have it on tape. Like nobody makes books on tape anymore. So she was trying so hard to help her, but the lady just wanted a Fire and Fury on tape. And I realized that for most people, that's just a euphemism at this point. Like when I say books on tape, I mean an MP3. This woman definitely needed a tape. Like CDs won't do.
Oh my gosh. That's so amazing. Have you ever seen a real rabbit's foot ever?
I don't think so.
Like on a keychain?
No. I mean, I've seen fake ones.
They used to be prizes at our local pizza joint. Like you'd exchange tickets and get a rabbit's foot.
Oh my gosh.
It was a different time, but I also now have questions about what kind of pizza joint my family was taking me to.
Now I do too as well.
Whatever. I didn't have a lot of supervision as a child. I'm sure everybody's piecing this together very slowly, but I was a latchkey kid and often allowed to run wild. And look, I turned out mostly fine.
You turned out so much better than fine.
Well, thank you, Pixie.
Mm-hmm. Anytime.
Well, we have been busy. And you know who else has been busy?
Who?
The book news.
Oh, the book world. Yep.
Is that a good segue?
It was so good. It keeps on going, that book world.
Just yesterday, there was an opinion piece published in the New York Times about Barnes & Noble. Basically, Barnes & Noble is in trouble. Their sales are down 10%. And this opinion piece basically said, we need to save Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble is our only hope. Yeah. And I got a little impassioned in support of that opinion because, like, I need Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
We have one really crappy independent bookstore in this area, which you know, and you probably don't know this, but it has halved in size.
I did know that. Mm-hmm.
And so basically, it's either go to Barnes & Noble or nothing for me.
Yeah. I'm sure that some of our readers are so sick of hearing me talk about it and the beast that is Amazon because... Mm-hmm. It's so convenient and a lot of us use it all the time. And I get that. I totally do. But Barnes & Noble really is one of the last competitors for Amazon. And as soon as they go out of business, Amazon can just shoot those prices right back up. And that's what will happen. And you won't be able to go to a brick and mortar store very easily. In a perfect world, independent bookstores would compete, but it's just not the reality, and it hasn't been for a long time.
And a lot of people also think that Barnes & Noble has mismanaged itself, which I don't know. I would not disagree.
Mm-hmm. Me neither. That. Yeah, same. Mm-hmm.
But it still occupies a really important place in a lot of smaller communities. The day Barnes & Noble goes out of business is the day someone's going to have to scrape me up off the ground. There will be much wailing and gnashing of teeth. I have such good memories.
Yeah, I do too. And I love going to Barnes & Noble still.
You know, my birthday is this month.
Oh, guys.
And if people want to give me a present, they can go and buy a book at Barnes & Noble. It would make me so happy to have our Twitter mentions, our Instagram DMs, our emails just full of receipts from Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, so. Yeah. This book club podcast is not sponsored in any way by Barnes & Noble. This is actually true love that we have for the store.
Yeah, it really is. But there's more book news.
Yes, there is. It's still award time. Lots of awards are happening. Specifically, the Pulitzers were announced a couple of weeks ago. And the novel Less by Andrew Sean Greer was a total shocker of a winner.
And didn't you just read it?
I did. It's so delightful. But yes, it's not your typical Pulitzer book because it's very like funny and heartwarming and not depressing. Which if you think about last year's winner, which I believe was Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. Yes, it was. Like, I can't think of a more sad, depressing, dark book. And that just tends to be the kind of book that wins, you know? So this one was a nice surprise. But I really did enjoy reading it.
How nice. Do you think it's along the lines of, like, Where'd You Go, Bernadette by Maria Simple?
It's, yes, I think it's maybe a little warmer. The character who's the hero, his name is Mr. Less, Arthur Less. Maybe it's Dr. Less. I can't remember. Anyway, he's a writer. And it's just sort of about him growing into middle age. And it's a love story and him having regrets and reflecting on his youth. And he's just a very lovable, humble character.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And I need more books like that in my life. Sounds like the perfect book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great that they awarded a Pulitzer this year because they are not awarding a Nobel Prize in Literature.
Nope.
Did you know that?
Yeah. Kind of a mess.
There have been multiple sexual assault allegations leveraged against members of the committee. And so basically the Nobel organization said, okay, well, we don't have any judges, so we're not going to have a prize.
Like, Me Too is just dredging up so much history that I can't see an end to it anytime soon.
The cards are going to keep falling because women and men are finally feeling empowered to come forward. I mean, just this week, is it Junot Diaz? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
He basically had a bunch of allegations come out about him. And he is a Pulitzer Prize winning author.
He is, yeah.
We're just going to have to keep an eye on that because that story, as they say, is still developing.
Indeed. Just breaking.
I took like 3 journalism classes in college, so you can trust me. This is not fake news.
That is a way more than I ever took. So I trust you implicitly, Maria.
Well, speaking of literature, we have a book that we are reading this month.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
We are reading Ask Me About My Uterus by Abby Norman.
So I'm sure some of our listeners are like, why did you choose this book?
It's a good question.
It is.
We chose this book because both of us are super interested in the way that society treats women's bodies. So I think you and I both did quite a bit of research on this when we were in grad school. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting things is that the female body, like literally your physical form, often becomes a place where political ideas get played out.
Definitely. This really was basically what my dissertation was about.
An expert in the house. You guys. It's Pixie's time to shine.
I don't know about that. But just the idea that the female body is a subject that has gone very, I suppose, unexplored in many ways for a long, long time. And yet it's still this arena for conversation and for political action. That definitely showed up in my dissertation, too. On a personal level, you know, I am interested because I have been affected by physical problems for much of my life. Mm-hmm. My mother was a woman who suffered from a lot of pain that was ignored, basically. Mm-hmm. And she did pass away after diagnosing herself. You know, and then I've got other family members, mostly women, who are dealing with things like doctors not believing them when they say there's something wrong. You know, so
yeah,
I just felt very strongly that this subject was an important one that our readers could listen or talk and get involved with us on Instagram and Twitter and hopefully maybe even read the book and think, you know what? Yeah, if there's something wrong with me, I need to chase it down. And try to empower themselves when talking about their health. And if you are a male listener, help the women in your life feel empowered when talking about their health.
Right. Because when you dig into the statistics about how women's health and men's health are treated in the medical field, it is just staggering how different the approaches to medicine are, depending on whether you're a man or a woman.
Definitely.
So I have a quote from an article written by Joe Frazier, and he explains that women are more likely to be treated less aggressively in their initial encounters with the healthcare system until they, quote, prove that they are as sick as male patients, which is a phenomenon referred to in the medical community as Yentl syndrome.
It's just, I mean, why must we prove it? you know, but men don't have to.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned that you have this in your family, and I will forever be angry about the situation that happened to your mom. Yeah. But I think when we take a bigger look, we all know some woman who's been affected by this on some level.
Absolutely.
I actually have kind of a positive story about this. So my sister was critically ill in 2016. And when she ended up going to the ER because she had chest pain, they took her seriously, but they took her seriously because her vitals were crazy.
Mm.
Like, her heart rate was elevated. She was running like 105 degree fever. Like, it was clear that she was really, really sick. So that's a positive example of how the medical community like believed her. But on the flip side, it took her 2 weeks to go to the ER because she was like, no, I don't want to make a big deal out of it. Like, it hurts, but it doesn't hurt that bad. Right. And we're talking like chest pain.
Yeah.
So it's not just, you know, lobbing bombs at the medical community, but women are often taught socially that their pain doesn't matter, or that they need to downplay their pain so they're not a quote unquote problem.
Absolutely. No. And I definitely don't want to denigrate them either as an institution. I, you know, in my life, I've got a fantastic primary care doctor who's a man who's been my doctor for years. And anytime I come to him with a concern, you know, his response to me is, well, you know your body, so let's figure it out. You know, it's he never dismisses me. I've never, ever felt that way. And recently when I went to the emergency room and I thought something was wrong, I got there and a friend of mine was the ER doctor. And I said, hey, I think something's wrong. Here's what it might be. And immediately he was like, OK, let's see if that's what it is. And sure enough, I was right. So like, I have always had support and I have felt listened to. So my experience does not sound anything like what Abby Norman is talking about in this book. And yet I know people who have had the same experience. And the longer I live, the more I hear this story, just kind of on a variation.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so just like everything in this podcast, we're not painting with a broad brush, but it's very important that people understand that on the whole, women's pain is not treated with as much seriousness as men's pain is still today in 2018.
Yep. There's this book that came out a few years ago called In the Kingdom of the Sick by Laurie Edwards. And Laurie suffers from neuralgia. Is that what it is?
I don't know what that is.
Neuropathy.
Oh, sorry. Like nerve pain.
Yes, yes. Which some people don't even believe is a real illness.
Oh, come on.
You know, really? So she's kind of writing this story about what it's like to be a sick person who doesn't look sick. Mm-hmm. And she references this study called The Girl Who Cried Pain, which came out, I believe, in 2001. It was a seminal study regarding the bias against women in medical pain treatment. And she wrote that this study, quote, found that women's reports of pain are taken less seriously than men's, and they are less likely to receive aggressive treatment than our men. In fact, research shows that men who report pain are more likely to receive painkillers for their symptoms, while women are given antidepressants and are more likely to have their pain dismissed as emotional, psychogenic, and not real. Which is also bullshit, because women have very high tolerance for pain.
Yeah. Intensely. So kind of going back to that, when my sister got into the ER, what they found is that her chest pain was a collapsed lung.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So the pain threshold is high.
Mm-hmm.
And also, women are more likely to wait longer in an ER before receiving any kind of acute pain treatment than men. So most men will wait about 49 minutes before they're given painkiller, and women have to wait on average 65. So
amazing.
It's really stunning.
It is.
Part of this, and I'm sure we'll talk about this next episode with the book too, is that when women start complaining, people think of them as hysterical.
Right. And the longer you dig into this too, and I think Abby tries to do this in her book, and most good studies of women's pain do, is that it's also an intersectional problem, right? That poverty makes a difference. Race makes a difference. Age. So it's not just about women. You know, there are different categories of women who have an even harder time getting treatment or taking seriously when they have complaints. So we're just interested in exploring this in a deeper way. And Abby's story seemed very intriguing because she is a young woman with a unique situation. And she's talking about endometriosis, which is something that, you know, women my age, tons of people I know have this or have experiences mm-hmm. with it. The Department of Health and Human Services says that 11% of women between ages of 15 and 44 suffer from it, which is a lot of people. Wow. And most of them, their number one symptom is pain. So when a woman shows up at the doctor's office and says, I have pain, and it's like down here, you know, they ought to be taken seriously. And yet, one of the things Abby talks about is how very new most of the research on endometriosis is. Like within our lifetime, most of the research has happened, which is crazy.
Yeah. So 11% of women roughly equals to the same population percentage as people who suffer with liver disease. Mm-hmm. And when you go into PubMed, which is it's a medical research database, and you search for studies on liver disease versus endometriosis, four times as many studies on liver disease pop up as they do on endometriosis. Even though endo has been known about for, it's not just like it came up this decade.
No. Right?
Like they've known that endometriosis is a thing for a century. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just super under-researched considering how many people suffer. And of course, that 11% are just women who are reporting. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of women who either don't have access to medical care, so they can't report, or women who are just suffering because they believe that like incredibly painful curl up on the floor and want to die periods are just part of being a woman.
Right.
Like they wouldn't even know to ask for help with that. Mm-hmm. It's really upsetting, especially since endometriosis is like largely considered a woman's disease, kind of like ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you can't have ovarian cancer if you don't have ovaries.
Right.
You learned something today, everybody. But the reason that ovarian and cervical cancers are so deadly is because women wait so long before they report symptoms. And when they do report symptoms, people don't take them seriously. So the disease progresses until it's a stage three, a stage four, and then it's really, really bad. There is a comic book writer. I guess she's a graphic novelist. Her name is Kate Beaton.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard of her.
I have.
Mm-hmm. She's wonderful. She draws historical comics. She's fantastic. You can find her on Twitter at Kate Beaton. Or no, it's at Beatona, Beatonna, I believe. And her sister Becky is in hospice care because she had been having pain. And she was dismissed by a bunch of her doctors until finally someone took her seriously. And by the time they got her into treatment, it turns out that she had stage 4 cervical cancer that was inoperable. And so if someone had taken her seriously earlier on in the process,
things might have changed. Ugh, yeah.
And once you start asking, the stories start coming.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of the stuff, as you pointed out, you can't see.
Right.
People don't take it seriously.
Absolutely. So I guess the reason we chose this book is because we kind of had an action in mind that hopefully people would feel a little bit more empowered to believe themselves when they feel pain and to fight for themselves when they feel it as well. And look for that opinion. Look for the person who wants to help you track down what's happening to you. Because odds are it's not in your head. You know, if Mm-mm. you're feeling pain, there's probably something that's triggering that pain.
And this is not in the book, but I will also say that that doubles for mental illness.
Definitely.
So mm-hmm. take care of yourselves, ladies and gents. We really love you.
We do. Absolutely. So we don't know a lot about Abby Norman. She's not like, you know, a best-selling novelist or anything like that with a long storied past, but we do know a little bit.
Oh, gosh, I was taking a drink of water.
It's okay.
So she's a science writer, freelance science writer, based out of New England. She lives in Maine, and her work has been featured in a lot of places that you guys will recognize. So Harper's, The Independent, Lit Hub, The Rumpus, Paste 17 Magazine, Atlas Obscura, Medium, and others.
She's been diagnosed with endometriosis and some related illnesses for 8 years. And that's kind of the story of this book. All the different things that she goes through to reach that diagnosis, among others. And so now she's a patient advocate. She pushes for better research, more knowledge for doctors, and autonomy for patients who are suffering from chronic pain. She also speaks at medical conferences about her experiences with crippling endometriosis. And her description of it is truly terrifying and sad.
Mm-hmm. It makes me incredibly glad that I don't have it. And it makes me very sad for people who do.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Abby also has a podcast called Let Me Google That, which is daily. It is a daily podcast where she talks about fascinating ideas that she's uncovered on the internet. As people who put out a podcast every 2 weeks and sometimes struggle with that, I cannot imagine a daily podcast. Just kill me.
Yeah. I hope she has some help.
Lord God, I don't know how she could do it without it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, that's really impressive.
And she has a really, really cute dog named Whimsy.
Oh, Whimsy.
Oh, what a good name.
So good.
I love dogs.
Me too.
Even though I don't read books with dogs on the cover.
You shouldn't. Have you seen Isle of Dogs yet?
No. Is it cute?
It is good. Yes.
Jeff Goldblum does a voice in it.
All of my favorite men are in this movie.
Is Hopper?
He's not. So I guess he's not. But no, Bill Murray and Goldblum are both in it.
They are both great. Did you see the one of our listeners on Twitter who also loves Hopper?
Yes, I did. You know it's good, girl.
She definitely was like, Pixie, I get you.
I mean,
it's at cbarajas82. And she said that the best quote ever from a Misfit Book Club episode was in episode 13 when you said, quote, any person with a sexual feeling in them ought to be in love with Hopper.
I mean, yeah, thank you. We're on the same page. No, you're not wrong. I think we are in it.
Oh, man. But we're about to be out of it because this is the end of our episode.
Oh, girl, that's true. It is.
Everybody, keep an eye on Instagram and Twitter. We're going to have our questions for this book coming out next week. And I think they're going to be really, really good.
I'm excited. Yeah.
To hear what you have to say.
Me too. So as I alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, Maria and I are anonymous. These are not our real names. No one in our personal lives knows that we do this. So we can't tell them to listen. And that means we hope that you will tell your friends to listen.
Just point them to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or MisfitBookClub.com, where they can subscribe. And if you have been listening to this podcast and you like what you hear, we would love an iTunes review. It takes 5 seconds and it helps other people find this podcast. So please head on over there, leave us a little comment. We love them, and we will love you forever.
Yeah, that warms our cold little hearts.
It does.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Misfit Book Club, on Insta at Misfit Book Club, or on Facebook at Misfit Book Club. And you can email us too at misfitbookclubpodcast@gmail.com.
Anyway, yes, follow us on social media. We're there all the time, and we love to chat with you. And with that, we're done. We'll see you in 2 weeks to talk about Ask Me About My Uterus. We'll have to ask each other about our uterus.
I will tell you all about it. I'll tell you all about my uterus for sure.
I can't wait to get acquainted with it. I don't know. Is it, wait, important. Is it uteruses? Uteri?
I couldn't say.
I'm going to go with
uteruses. Let's stay tuned and I will try to figure that out for the next episode.
All right, guys. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.